It's time for our conversation with the folks from K-State Research and Extension's Wildcat District. And joining us, we have Davin Strontz and Wendy Powell in studio. Good morning, ladies.
Good morning.
Hey, good to have you. You were like perfect there. It's in sync. That's some good stuff. Hey, we're going to be starting off a little bit with Davin here. But before we get into that, I want to go over maybe, I know we have some upcoming events that are on the way. You want to go over a few of those?
Yeah, so I mentioned that Wendy has one coming up in November, and it actually wasn't on my mind this morning, so I'm glad Wendy brought this handy list, because I am helping plan a small ruminant integrated pest management workshop or parasite management workshop November 3rd and November 4th. And the November 3rd one will be in Phillipsburg, Kansas. And then November 4th one will be in Newton, Kansas. So they're, Newton's about 3 hours away from here. So a little bit of a drive. But these will be really great workshops for anyone who raises sheep and goats. We'll be covering a lot of different aspects of sheep and goat management in general, and then specifically parasite management. And there will also be a FEMANTRA certification training during these workshops.
Hey, that's some good stuff there. All right. Well, as we get into, you know, obviously harvest continues for some different crops. We already have winter wheat coming up and all that sort of thing, but soybeans still, you know, getting ready for that. So, you know, we can never talk too much about safety. And I know we did have the safety week here, this kind of awareness week this a few weeks ago, but always a good topic. And David, I know you want to talk a little bit more about roadway safety during harvest.
Yeah. So like you mentioned, coming up pretty fast is going to be soybean harvest. I know a few farmers have already started cutting soybeans. We just wrapped up corn harvest. And if the weather continues to cooperate, they're going to be planting winter wheat soon as well. So it's a really busy time of year where there's a lot of tractors and other farm equipment on the highways. So I kind of just wanted to take this opportunity and talk about some roadway safety tips for the public, because I kind of use the analogy. I know for myself, growing up, my dad worked in road construction and maintenance. So we always had conversations related to, you know, driving safely in construction zones. Dad would tell, you know, crazy stories he experienced, that type of thing. So when I started driving, it was just second nature to me to, you know, slow down, pay attention in construction zones. And in construction zones, you know, they have all those signs telling you to slow down, to watch out for workers, that a construction zone is ahead. So even if you're not really familiar with driving through a construction zone, if you're a new driver, for example, there's those signs to guide you. But if you come up on a tractor or a combine and you're not used to driving and being on the roads with farm equipment, it can be a nerve-wracking experience if a combine is meeting you in the oncoming lane, of knowing what to do, especially on a narrower road, or if you get stuck behind a tractor that's moving slow on the road or even on the highway, it can be a frustrating experience. So just a few tips that I wanted to share. So the first is pay attention. This, of course, goes for driving in general. Distracted driving increases the chances of collision, especially if you meet a slow-moving vehicle such as a tractor, because you're moving fast, they're moving slow, you're not fully paying attention, and it cuts down your reaction time. And then slow down when you see farm equipment ahead, whether they are in front of you or in the oncoming lane. Slow down, because any type of farm equipment, they can't travel as fast as you can in a car or truck. And slowing down, if you're behind them, that will provide you with, you know, plenty of space. You won't be running right up on them. If they're in the oncoming lane, that gives you time to move over. When you see a wide spot, it gives them time to move over as well. And then just a reminder to be patient. The farmer in that tractor, combine, sprayer, whatever it is going as fast as they safely can. Like, they want to get to their destination just as fast as you do. And also, don't assume that they can move over to let you pass. The shoulders on the road may be too narrow or steep, which can cause equipment to tip, or the shoulder may be too soft or wet to support the weight of heavy farm equipment. And most likely, the first chance they get to move over to let you go by, when they safely can do so safely, they will. And then don't assume that the farmer knows that you are behind them. So big equipment equals big blind spots. Most operators will regularly check for vehicles behind them, but it's easy for vehicles to get lost in those blind spots. They also have to focus on the road ahead to ensure they stay safely on the road, watch out for oncoming traffic. So it's kind of like multitasking. They can't always be looking in their mirrors to see if they have people behind them to move over to let those folks pass. But they do routinely check their mirrors. And then sometimes when they're pulling an implement, like if a tractor is pulling a grain cart during harvest, those grain carts are really big as well and also increase that blind spot for the person who's driving that tractor. And then while they will move over to pass as soon as they can, don't assume they are letting you pass if you see them move over. Due to the size of some farm equipment, the operator will have to make wide turns, which means they will go farther into the opposite lane before making the turn. So for example, if they are making a left-hand turn, they will go farther onto the right side of the road before making the turn. And this goes for semis such as grain trucks as well. And then move over. If you see farm equipment in the oncoming lane and you have the opportunity, there's a nice wide spot or driveway coming up on the side of the road, please move over as soon as possible. Some roads are narrow and large equipment like combines will take up most of the road. And there might not be a good wide spot on the combine side of the road for them to move over safely. And then just another reminder that I threw in here that really goes, you know, for any time of year, is stop at intersections. Not all intersections in rural areas have stop signs. So I know where I live, we have quite a few intersections that don't have a stop sign for any direction. So please remember to stop at intersections, even when they don't have stop signs, to make sure there isn't traffic coming from a different direction.
Very good. Well, you know, the other thing, David, that I've noticed is, especially when you're on some of these dirt roads in rural areas, it can be kind of hard to tell, you know, how wide that road is, you know, how soft that shoulder is. And
right.
Sometimes, you know, especially if you're going 55 or whatever on these, you want to slow down, especially once you get out off to the side, because, you know, we all know dirt road driving can be a little treacherous, especially when you don't know the condition of the shoulder there.
Yes, so definitely, you know, like you mentioned, slow down when you're moving over to the shoulder of the road as well.
And I've also noticed, you know, especially at night, you know, you have some of these farmers are pushing it, trying to maybe get equipment back and that sort of thing, and you know, you can see kind of what's coming in the headlights, but sometimes that width is hard to tell the width of what's coming, or, you know, how far back it goes to, you know, what they're hauling
right.
And everything.
Yeah, exactly. And so most farm equipment will have that slow moving vehicle symbol on the back, which is that triangle with orange in the middle and a red outline. And those hopefully will help you see equipment when you're coming up behind it at night. But those do get faded and unfortunately don't get replaced as often, as they should. So yeah, that's a great reminder to, especially when you're driving evening hours, dusk, night, to still be paying attention, because that's also a time when, you know, if they're moving from one field to another or moving home from the night, there also might be kind of like a row of equipment.
Oh yeah.
as they're moving from one field to the next.
That's right. So good reminders there as we continue into some of these harvests for a few crops, and then winter wheat as well. Like you said, you know, that's several places they've already drilled it, but we've got lots more to do as I know people are trying to catch up and everything. So, Madavin, if people do have questions for you, what's the best way to get a hold of you?
They can reach me by calling the Independence office. That number is 620-331-2690.
Okay, well, we got lots more to come in. In fact, Wendy, we have a minute or two. You want to give us a preview of what we're going to be talking about in our next segment?
Yes, absolutely. We're going to discuss virtual fencing for livestock. So it's one of the new technologies available for grazing management. And so we're just going to dig into that a little bit. And since I have a minute, I'm going to go ahead and mention the winter cattle feeding meeting. It's called Limit Feeding and Other Winter Wonders. We're going to do that on November 14th in Girard. It's an evening meeting. There will be a meal. So mark your calendars for that. The flyer is in process, so be looking out for that. Anybody is welcome to come. So mark your calendar, November 14th in the evening in Girard.
And speaking of cattle, you brought that up here, Wendy. I know that kind of this time last year, and as we were getting into the end of October and starting November, we were starting to talk about, you know, real hay shortages and having to feed cattle, all sorts of weird stuff. Do you know how we're looking compared with last year versus this year?
Yeah, so we're not quite as severe as we were last year. There's some parts of the Wildcat District that are still incredibly dry, mostly western Montgomery County, western Wilson County. But the rest of our district is kind of okay. Not great, not where we should be, but okay. I am still getting lots of questions about feeding corn stalks, feeding soybeans. If you are going to feed soybeans, or if you're considering putting your beans up for hay instead of a crop, make sure you look at all the pesticides that you applied, any herbicide or insecticide. A lot of those are not labeled for forage in any shape, so grazing or for hay or even into silage. So if that's a consideration that you've got for your beans, just make for sure that you're looking at those labels. And if you've got questions, for sure, give me a call. I can help you look those up as well.
Okay. Well, I feel like folks had maybe a little more time to plan for this year, knowing that, yeah, it seems like the drought continues and everything. So, you know, everyone's doing the best they can, getting as many cuts as they can. So that's a good, we appreciate on that. So,
yes.
Okay, well, we have that coming up here as we continue our chat with the folks from K-State Research and Extension's Wildcat District. Weather-wise, we are looking at a couple more warmer days before we have a really steep drop-off here temperature-wise. Low 80s today for the four states, some rain continuing, that's always good. And then we're on our way to 67 by Friday. Low 60s by Saturday, looking like right around 63 for Coffeyville and Independence. So we'll take it. It might actually start to feel like fall. Mighty 69 right now as we head closer to news time here on KGGF. Good morning, 8:11 here on the Mighty 690 as we go throughout a Wednesday edition of the program. And as we do every Wednesday at this time, we get to talk with the folks from K-State Research and Extension's Wildcat District. And we have continuing on with us Wendy Powell and David Strauss. Good morning again, ladies.
Hello.
Good morning.
So we are going to continue our discussion here with Wendy Powell and wanting to talk a little bit about virtual fencing today. So that's like the ching ching ching, right? Right.
Well, I'm not really sure what you're doing there with
remember
your
the like the thing with the like the what is that fitting where they have like the suits and
the swords,
you know,
yeah.
The swords.
It makes me think of Parent Trap.
Yeah, they do that in Parent Trap, don't they?
Yeah.
Yeah. I've always thought that was such an odd thing, but here we are. But no, we're talking a little bit more practical application.
Yes. Yeah. So this isn't something that's new to the world. Pet owners have been using these for a few years now. It's like where you map your lawn and you put this specific collar on your dog and they can roam free and it will buzz or vibrate when the dog gets close to the boundary, and then it will maybe give a slight shock, a benign shock, whenever the dog gets close to the boundary so that they don't cross it.
Okay, and we know like the Kleenex equivalent of that would be like invisible fence. People heard that name and that sort of thing for
yes.
dogs.
Yes,
for pets,
so. Yes. So think of larger acreage and a larger animal, and it's practically the same concept. So we're talking about mapping our pastures, and you have your computer software program where you've got your specific lines laid out, and then the livestock will have collars on them that, again, use beeps or vibrations and to let the animal know they're getting close to the boundary. And then as they really get on top of the boundary, it'll give them a benign shock. So it's exactly the same concept. So the things that are really cool about this virtual fencing options is, I don't know how much fence you've built, James, but in some areas of the world, it is really hard to get through some ground. I mean, right now we've got some hard ground because of the drought, but also we run into rock problems. We run into, you know, hills or just uneven ground, and it's really difficult to fence.
Oh, yeah. And not everyone, some people love it. They like, mm-hmm. it's like their thing mm-hmm. is doing. I'm not, yeah, definitely not one of those people. I mean, like, it gives, you know, there's some guys where they'll get a group of four of them together and, you know, one's doing the work and everyone else is watching. But, you know, they like it. That's like their sport. They'll spend a whole day, you know, on a corner. But no, I definitely agree. I'm not a big fan of working on fence.
Yeah. So this technology allows us to put boundaries up that are not physical. So we don't have to worry about, you know, hammering in T-posts and getting the tractor out to drive posts and getting the side-by-side out to string wire and all the things.
And the welder for if you're going to do it really crazy. Yep.
Yeah. So that it eliminates a lot of labor. There was a study done back up in Nebraska last year at a cattle conference, and they surveyed some of the stocker producers and cow-calf producers. And those guys, 10 out of 10 of them were familiar with virtual fencing, and 10 out of 10 of them said labor is always an issue. Lack of labor is always an issue. But right now, virtual fencing, we've got a lot of research to do on it, which I'll dig into that a little bit later. But it's out there, folks know about it, but what applications can we put that in right now today? So some of the ways to use it, aside from, you know, virtual fencing, we wouldn't use it on perimeter fencing, but rather more interior fencing to allow for rotational grazing. And so you can create smaller paddocks, if you will, and move the cattle along. That's an efficient way to use, like, cover crops or crop residue. If you're planting summer or winter annuals, we want to more consolidate those grazing days and let those animals use that forage more efficiently. And so we've heard forever, research has shown forever, that rotational grazing and systematic grazing is much more efficient than continual grazing. So turning cows out on 50 acres for a year, is you're going to have a lot of forage waste. Whereas if you move those cows from paddock to paddock, you'll get more usage out of that. So that's kind of the philosophy there. Some other ways to use it would be to exclude areas. So think of places like, you know, if you've just burned an area and you want to keep the cattle off of it, or you've got, right now a big problem is toxic forage. So if you've got a space in your pasture that you are curious about, that you're not sure is safe, and so you just want to keep the animals out of there, then you can virtually fence it, and the cattle should stay off of that. In the northwestern part of the United States, there's lots of applications for this with the burning part of things. They like to make sure the livestock is staying off of lands that has had wildfire on it so that the livestock don't graze those new grasses too short. So that's kind of some of the applications that we can talk about. Cattle, sheep, and goats have shown that they can learn these virtual fencing cues. Of course, there's going to be those stubborn animals that kind of just put their head through and power on through the shock. Everybody's familiar with different personalities. But for the most part, cattle, sheep, and goats are very adept at learning these cues. And so we can use these technologies for those species.
And so how are these boundaries set up? Like, is there, you know, like a computer program you go into, or is it like GPS based? Like, how do you actually set up those lines?
Yeah, it is computer based through GPS. So everything is, you know, with all the satellites and technology. So it's a computer program. Each different company that supplies these virtual fencing materials has their own computer program. Okay. And there's 5 to 10 of them out there for livestock. Vence, V-E-N-C-E, is one of them. There's a bunch of others. So it's kind of expensive to get started with, but there's a lot of research going on across the nation with different aspects of this. They're looking at the cost to benefit ratio, which is the biggest question for livestock producers. You know, if I put this much money up into this virtual fencing investment, how long is it going to take to pay for itself? So then we have to, you know, look at the cost of our fencing repairs. We look at cattle gains because we can actually graze more strictly. And so all of those numbers have to be brought together to come up with a benefit.
Sure. And I assume, you know, the cost with this new system would be obviously the collars, the wearables, all that sort of thing. And then I would bet that this is probably kind of like a subscription service, maybe in some cases.
I'm not sure how each different company does it, but yes, there it's going to have to be some sort of connected program to stay up to date with all of the current technology, all of the current aerial photographs and insert things that I'm not quite familiar with here. So yes, it has to be updated constantly. So you've got your initial setup costs. Some of the concerns are keeping the collars on the animals. Where they're still working on those, like the collar itself. And then if we're using these on cows and they're out there calving, then that means there's a collar on the cow, but the calf's not going to be born with a collar. Yeah. So if that calf crosses the border, what's that cow going to do? So there's still some research going on about how that can be mitigated, because, you know, the instinct of a mama is very strong and it's their job to take care of their babies. So if their babies cross the border, then we would expect the cow to as well.
Sure. I mean, maybe in that case, just having a more traditional fenced area during that time, during calving time, where they could go into and just take care of business, and then once that's all, once things are stabilized a little bit.
Yep, and get collars on everything. And then we come into the question of putting a collar on an animal that is growing. So it's got to be fairly fixed as far as sizing goes. And so as the animal grows, that would need to be adjusted. So there's still lots of questions about how virtual fencing can actually be applied at a cost-effective rate. But it's definitely something out there that we can be looking at. A couple of other things to think about. If we are not using our physical fences or we're eliminating some of those, then there's going to be less conflict with wildlife as well. Sometimes that's not a problem. Sometimes it is. Deer push through or they get over it, or sometimes they get caught in a fence. And so that could eliminate some of that problem. So lots of questions still on the use of virtual fencing and how effective it would be for our pocketbook, but there are huge amounts of research going on right now. And K-State is doing some. Dr. Jamie Lynn Farney has been working on some projects too, so we can be looking for that information in the next year or so too. So that's exciting stuff.
Sure. And you know, you also mentioned, you know, these are electronic devices, so there would be probably some charging as well, I would assume, that go into it, battery replacement.
Yes, so there would be some labor involved, not only with applying the collar to the animal, but also making sure the battery stays in check. Some of them are solar powered, so they recharge. So then I don't know how long the battery life is. It's probably going to depend on the brand, but so recharging is probably the ideal way to go, but the monitoring system of knowing where your animals are, it could also tell you if the battery's getting
Number
close.
95, battery's getting low,
yes.
Sort of thing.
Yeah. Yep.
Well, good deal. Well, that sounds really interesting. I mean, another way that we are trying to use technology to make our lives a little bit easier and, you know, keeping pace with that 21st century, you know, agriculture and production is really interesting. So it sounds like a cool tool. I think there's a lot of opportunity with this.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, well, very good. Well, as we kind of wrap things up today, let's go over a few more upcoming events.
Yeah, so I mentioned earlier we've got our limit feeding and other Winter Wonder cattle feeding conference or meeting November 14th in Girard at the Civic Center. That's an evening program. November 14th in Girard. So mark your calendars for that.
And then November 3rd in Phillipsburg at the Phillips County Fairgrounds. And November 4th in Newton at the Harvey County Fairground, there will be small ruminant integrated parasite management workshops. So as anyone who raises sheep and goats know, dealing with internal parasites especially is one of the biggest management challenges. So both of these workshops is going to be the same information covered both days, the one on November 3rd, that's a Friday. So that one will be from 5 to 8 p.m. in the evening. And then the one on Saturday will be from 10 to 3. And a meal is provided both days. And we have Dr. Hart coming in as one of the speakers. He's a retired small ruminant specialist from Langston University, has done a lot of work over the years with sheep and goats. And then Dr. Homer is coming in from Lincoln University in Missouri, and he has a lot of great knowledge to share about sheep and goat management as well. So if you raise sheep and goats or thinking about starting to raise sheep and goats, these would be a great workshop to attend.
Very good. And Wendy and Adavin, if people have questions for you, what's the best way to get a hold of you?
Yeah, they can give me a call, Wendy, at the Labette County Extension Office, 620-784-5337.
And they can give Adavin a call by calling our independence office at 620-331-2690.
All right, ladies. Well, always a pleasure. Great to talk to you here. And look forward to chatting again here real soon.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Okay, thank you so much. And coming up next, we do have Open Line on the way. And we'll be talking with Candy Westbrook here right around 9:10. So Shay Neal will be taking over now because I've got to go to my weather meeting up in Independence. So appreciate everyone listening on in, and he'll take good care of you here for Open Line, and I will talk to you all tomorrow.